Welcome to Why Don't We Dress for Dinner Anymore? Our host, senior style icon, Teddy Crockman.
An entrepreneur and natural redhead, Melissa Pierce.
Ta-da!
Our guest today is none other than Diane Gilman, the queen of jeans herself. Diane is an inspiration for women embracing their third act. As a tele-retailer legend, she began selling a beautiful line of washable silk in the 90s on QVC. And then in the early 2000s, she created a casual chic line called DG2. A fashion rule breaker at the age of 59, Diane created DG2 to meet the needs of jeans crafted specifically for middle-aged bodies. Diane even used her own measurements to design this sexy and fashionable line for baby boomers like me. Diane's DG2 jeans became the top-selling tele-retailing brand globally, and in 2020, she sold over $100 million of blue jeans geared towards mature women.
What?
She is also a survivor and thriver of stage 3 breast cancer, all while accomplishing this fashion milestone. In addition, Diane currently hosts a podcast called Too Young to Be Old.
Perfect.
Named after a book she wrote about her life experiences, and does a sister podcast as well called Fashion Thursday with Diane.
Wow, you're busy.
So yeah, welcome I am. Podcast, Diane.
I like it that way. Yeah, you know, the Fashion Thursdays have gone viral, and I think we're coming up to 15,000 subscribers. We got an award from YouTube. We had 100,000 direct hits in 2024. So I'm just beginning to learn my new craft. But what I loved was taking the learned ability to speak to a camera and be authentic and feel like I'm in a one-on-one conversation from the tele-retailing community to the social media community and never standing still. Yeah.
How was that different?
A different audience, younger audience. Believe it or not, as much as we do podcasts for baby boomers on how to eat, how to get a better night's sleep, how to. The current events aspect of Fashion Thursdays with Diane, the average age is 35 to 50.
That's fabulous.
With, shockingly enough, 20 to 25% of the audience being men.
Yes, I have that too on my Instagram.
Yeah.
I have 50% of my audience is men, and I'm showing fashions. So I don't
go figure. It's very, I think the thing that I find the most disconcerting is when you were doing tele-retailing, at least until QVC and HSN merged, you had a monitor in front of you, invisible to the audience. And you could say, I love red, don't you? And if the majority of the audience loved red, actually they love purple, it would spike way up. So you sort of knew what to say because you could see the reaction. What I find from social media is,
you can't tell.
You can't tell. Like we did a podcast on a guy that just won, I think it was a Netflix award, for doing a short video on the fact that clothing is killing us. The spandex in clothing is poisonous. Thank you, my entire wardrobe is spandex. And we garnered 3 million hits. That was our first experience with viral.
Wow.
And yeah, and so I think that it's sort of like being in a casino and just playing the slots. You may love what you're talking about, but that is very different from capturing the audience's attention. But I find it very stimulating. I mean, it's like you're playing the odds every week. And I write my own scripts and I really have a good time doing it. But even more than that, I hope I'm helping a generally large and woefully underinformed public about things we should all be at least thinking about.
Yes. And I love your podcasts. I watch them as often as I can.
Thank you.
You have fabulous topics about health, about fashion, about nutrition, really good and interesting topics. And like you said, Diane, I don't know how long you've been doing your podcast for. We've only been in this for 4 months. So we're
I would say about 1 year and a couple of months, because when I walked away from teleretail, and in a great part that was because of breast cancer and coming through the treatment and thinking to myself, is this what you want to do with the time you've got left? Do you want to keep on doing the same thing, or do you want to be more like you were in your youth when you were a risk taker and you did things that made your heart pound and you were inspired? And I went for inspiration for sure. And I think the other reason why I did it was I was sitting in the chemotherapy treatment room one day at the fabulous Dubin Breast Cancer Center within Mount Sinai in New York. Everyone had their own private room, their own catered organic lunch. You actually had your own masseuse who did either your shoulders or your feet, but couldn't do both. Right. Okay, so I'm sitting there. I'm at the height of my fame. And someone walks in and goes into the room next to me, obviously a patient. Everybody stops and goes, "Oh my God, Sheila is here. Oh my God, how are you? Oh, you look fabulous." And I'm thinking, who the F is Sheila? I'm Diane Gilman. No one's telling me I look fabulous. No one's paying attention to me. And then they said to her, "Don't tell anybody, but we got 4 lunches for you." So I'm thinking, whoa, this woman really likes sun-dried tomatoes on focaccia bread. Wow. And I'm thinking to myself, who the hell is this woman? Why isn't anybody paying attention to me? I mean, I was so locked into an ivory tower. And so eventually the nurse gets to me and I said, "Why don't you offer me 4 lunches?" He said, "Diane, you hate the lunches." I said, "Well, yeah, but it'd be nice to be offered." "Okay, Diane, would you like a lunch?" "No, thank you. But who is Sheila? Is she a Broadway star? A Broadway musical star? Is she a news anchor on NBC or ABC in Rockefeller Center? Is she a dramatic actress in a soap opera?" I'm going through this whole thing because I can't imagine anybody will be interested in anybody but me, right? And you get that way when you're successful and you're just surrounded by a bunch of people that just want to keep you in a good mood.
Let me stop you there because I want to start from your quote-unquote humble beginnings.
Here was how I got humble again. Oh. The nurse looks at me and says, "You're really an odd person." And I'm like, "Why?" "Well, who is Sheila?" And they said, "Diane, she's a battered housewife with a child who can't go home because it's too dangerous, has stage 3 breast cancer, and is living in a homeless shelter. And she can't eat the food. It's horrible.
No wonder the 4 lunches.
Every time she comes in, we give her 4 lunches, and that is 4 days worth of food for her." And I started crying.
And you felt this big, probably.
Well, I thought to myself, I need to change my life. My perspective is so warped. And I need if I get through this alive, I need to give back.
That's a fabulous story.
I can see
your emotion. Yes.
Yeah. I never saw Sheila, but I wrote a third book last year. I was part of an international anthology for women. And it was about Sheila, and I thanked her.
She brought you back to reality.
So changing my life and just changing my purpose and my passion, because I think aging for females is so unbelievably difficult and we get no respect for it at all. None.
Yeah. So through that lens, I can't wait to jump through like where you came from. And so, see where it goes.
Let's start just so our audience who may not be familiar with you as a teleretailer, even though, like I said, I'm a huge fan. I always was.
Thank you.
And you were really like one of the original influencers.
I was.
You knew how to pitch your clothes. You sold, like I said, a bazillion times. But I want to start because I remember you telling the story on HSN that you actually started out making hand embroidered and bedazzled jeans while you were a student in UCLA for rock stars.
What?
That blow my mind. Cher. I mean, but
Rod Stewart.
Holy shit.
And you're just a student at UCLA. And then I read that your parents were objecting to you making any kind of foray into the fashion.
I had to leave home for that. Yeah. Really? It was a battle.
What did they want you to do?
Okay. So my mother was, they were refugees from Europe and they came over around 1906. I was already getting very funky in Poland and Ukraine. And so that's my origin. And my grandfather made a lot of money in the stock market and then in one day lost it all. And they turned the mansion in Portland, Maine, into a transient boarding house for men that were just drifting through and had no money. And on the side, she had to sew every piece of clothing. They couldn't afford to buy ready-made clothing. She had to sew everything for her 7 brothers. So to her, sewing was
a prison.
Being a prisoner of life and was low class. And no, what you needed to do was fit into the regime of the burgeoning middle class of America. And that meant you only went to college to find a husband, don't care about graduating.
That makes sense for the time.
And you have a family, and that's your purpose in life. Well, from the time I was about 3 years old, all I kept saying to them was, I don't want to play with baby dolls. I just want to make clothes for them. And that's what I used to do. I would take little girls, all my friends, I would take their baby dolls for like a week and I would make them little collage paper things with doilies, little dresses. And my parents were horrified.
Of course they
horrified.
Were. They thought you were dressing.
I taught myself to sew on the Family Singer sewing machine in the middle of the night. I'd hide the fact that I wanted to learn how to sew. I had a very, very troublesome childhood that way. And then I wanted to go to a fashion school. They were only willing to fund me for UCLA. And I found out at my father's memorial when I was 52, that when I was a junior in high school, the Sorbonne in Paris had given me a 4-year scholarship.
Oh, my God.
And they did.
And they stood by the mailbox every day intercepted the letter and burnt it.
Oh my.
They didn't want you to go back to Europe at all.
Ever. So in my first semester at UCLA, a guy I knew, just a guy, came up to me one day and said, "Hey, my old lady, my girlfriend, right? My old lady, split on me. I've got this ticket, round trip ticket to London. I can't turn it in. I can't. It's fixed. Want it?" So I spent 6 months in swinging London to begin with.
To get away. Yeah.
I was not, I made a vow to myself as a child. I would try not to let 1 minute bypass me that I wasn't doing something exciting, wonderful, or constructive. And I think I've sort of been pretty good at keeping that promise.
It seems so. I mean, you've had a very exciting life. Let me ask you this. How did you come to sew these custom-made jeans for celebrities? How did, as a student at UCLA, how did you even connect with these celebrities?
Okay, I didn't sew them. I took their denim and hand-painted it, hand-jeweled it, slashed it, patched it, everything, embroidered it. One day, I was sitting in the quadrangle, which was kind of where the artsy students hung out, even though UCLA doesn't have much of an art curriculum. And a woman who was totally insane looking walked up to me and said, "You are fabulous." And we became best friends, Rosanna Norton. She went on to do for Brian De Palma all the costumes for every single one of his movies, including Dress to Kill and Carrie, the original Carrie.
Wow.
And so we opened a store together, which took about $200, called I'm a Hog for You, Baby, across the street from
I love the Cantor's, name.
Cantor's Delicatessen, where everybody in Hollywood hung out for a corned beef sandwich, right? Pastrami. And one day, a white Rolls Royce pulled up. And all of the parking spaces across the street were taken. We had one in front of the store. Who gets out? Cher. Sonny says, "You want a pastrami sandwich?" He says, "No, I'm not eating that junk." He goes across the street. She sees this bright yellow store, a Hog for You, Baby, you know, hand painted. And she comes in. We made Mary Quant style A-line dresses. We sewed them all ourselves, $10 each.
Wow.
She looks around, looks at some of the dresses. She was gorgeous. That she was really at the beginning of her pinnacle and height of beauty. She was just awe-inspiring.
It was just glamorous. Yeah.
She was, but, you know, she was born that way. I mean, she was born 6 feet tall and weighing 90 pounds.
Yeah, 6 feet tall.
Yeah, perfect. And she walks out and the chauffeur is there and she screams, "Go get Sonny. We're buying out the whole store. Open the trunk."
Oh.
And they bought out the entire store. We had to close the store for about four days. We had to stay up all night. And so we had nothing left.
Wow.
And so I met Cher. And then Rosanna was dating the lead singer for The Doors, Jim Morrison. That didn't hurt.
No.
And then another friend of mine became the seamstress in the band for Deep Purple and had just gotten back from touring Europe. It was a
back
different
when bands
era.
Had seamstresses.
Yeah.
Like seamstress for the band is such a funny thing to say, but that like that's not the case anymore.
Right. That's what it was. And so I met a million people and some of them were scary, like Janis Joplin, right? Scary. There were lots of drugs. And we were also naive about drugs at the time that The only thing was like an alarm would go off in me. Like, no, I remember getting invited. I moved to San Francisco and getting invited to the Grateful Dead's party at their
compound. Talk about drugs.
Right.
And I can only tell you a friend of mine went, and after she got thirsty, she was told there was like 3 pounds of acid in the well water.
Oh, I'm not sure.
And yeah, it took her like a month to sober up. And I just didn't want stuff like that happening. But I loved being on the edge of it all. However, at about 24 years old, 25, I just thought, this is a great party, but parties don't last forever. I've got to get, do you want to be professional? If you do, you've got to get serious. By then, I had had to cut off ties. I had to choose between fashion and family, and I chose fashion. Yeah. If you've ever met anybody, and I have, who recognized from almost a toddler age, because at about 3 years old, I started obsessing about being in fashion, you know your destiny. There are those of us born who know our destiny, and you will break down any number of barriers to fulfill that. And that was definitely me.
Yeah. Wow. Well, it sounds like you certainly did it, and you did it fabulously.
It was not easy at all. I had no backing, no money.
Yeah.
Everything was scratching for pennies.
But yet I
had fabulous luck.
Yeah. But yet then you go on to build this incredible brand of jeans for mature women. So tell us about that transition. Tell us about coming to a place where you're like, now I'm going to make jeans for women in their midlife and they're going to sell like hotcakes. And why?
Yeah, I was a middle-aged woman, and I lost my husband and my mother and my father all within about a 3-year period. And then I gained almost 100 pounds during menopause and after. And when I finally got my weight back to some form of control, I wanted to start wearing jeans again. I was a blue jean baby. I mean, that's what I did from the 60s. And I thought, oh my God, Diane, you're middle-aged and you're totally shut out of what you want to wear. And I thought, this is so unfair. So I took 1 year, and every Saturday or every Sunday, I went jean shopping. And in a year, I was relentless. I never found a jean that really fit. Then I thought, don't be stupid. You've got a sewing room in New York. You've got professionals and you've got pattern makers. Take my measurements and let's make a custom built jean for me. A much bigger waist and tighter around the middle, right? Skinnier thighs than a younger woman, la, 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 and a little bit shrunken. And I remember the first day I put those jeans on, it was a very shallow, easy boot cut shape. Fit through the thigh, because I used to have to get 4 times bigger than what I needed to fit my waist. And then my thighs are all baggy and I hated it. So I'm walking down 34th Street to get to work in the garment district on 7th Avenue. And two guys, young guys, cute, one of them was definitely cute, were in a manhole cover for Con Ed. One of them surfaces and he whistles and says, hey, lady, you got it going.
Oh.
And I was 60 and I thought, oh, yeah, this is like the Billy Crystal movie where they say, we'll have what she's having. I knew.
It was your magnificent moment.
I knew. And so I started pitching the idea, and nobody believed me and nobody wanted to do it. They said, don't be ridiculous. Jeans are just for other under 40 women. And I said, yeah, because they don't have one of their own. That's why. And so we got a new CEO at HSN, Mindy Grossman, brilliant. And she had been part of the birth of Polo Jeans, Ralph Lauren. And I thought she might understand, and I thought she might be more sympathetic because I was a woman and so was she. I pitched the idea to her, and she said, okay, you know that a fitted bottom has never sold on tele-retail, ever. And I said, yeah. I said, but look who you've got showing them. Soap opera stars who weigh like 80 pounds. I mean, come on. Let's get real here. And she said, okay. But at the time, primetime shows did about $500,000 an hour. That was a good primetime show, solid. She said, I cannot afford to lose half $1 million on you if this doesn't hit right.
No
but
pressure.
I'll give you 1 hour. Yeah. Tell me, she gave me 1 hour on a Sunday morning at 5 a.m. in the middle of the worst winter storm that ever existed in February. And I also got a large size host who was a poor ex who was screaming at me, it's like jeans. I hate you. I'm not putting those jeans on. And then the lights go on and it's like, morning. Yeah. So the host refused to wear them, had no experience with them because I was really a killer about if you're going to sell it, you need to know it and own it, wear it for God's sakes. Yeah. And they had bought 5,000 jeans, which was nothing for them. And we sold them out in 3 minutes and had really and truly had nothing to talk about for another 57 minutes. Nothing.
Wow.
I remember watching you, Diane, and it would be nothing for you to sell 40, 50, 60,000 pairs of jeans in one day.
You know, that is honestly the pinnacle was 2018 Thanksgiving weekend. You always wanted to do big weekend shows, you know, big family holidays when the guy was watching football and you were in the bedroom spending money ordering from HSN and QVC. It was my first show after being gone for 9 months getting treatment, and I said goodbye to the audience. So it was my first show back. I looked horrible. I mean, I had short hair. I sort of look like Annie Lennox, but not as good looking. And I gained a ton of weight from chemotherapy because they'd used so many steroids. So anyway, I go on air. Do you know, I literally never said a word all day. It was just phone calls coming in to thank me, congratulate me, say, we're so happy you're back. We sold 225,000 jeans in one day.
Oh, wow.
Unbelievable.
Why do you think even with your success, there are so, the options for women 50 plus are so limited still, even with your success?
I hate to say it, but we don't stand up for ourselves as a generation or the generation below us. We don't stand up for ourselves. We don't scream loud enough to make you have to listen to us. We're meek, and our parents, I think, my mother always said, life is over with at 30 for a woman, over with. Nothing to do, nothing to accomplish. So I think you go in with that, and I know that even the company, I sold my name and I sold my company, and I had set up a foolproof. It was unbelievable. If you do this and you do that and you just pay the audience some respect, here's what's going to happen. First thing, the minute the check was cashed, it was, oh God, thank God we're going back to 30-year-olds. Yeah.
Wow.
It's, you know, people have a very difficult time at probably almost any stage of life in rethinking yourself and redoing your goals and your beliefs. And so,
right. Well, it's hard. It's really hard. You get to, like, I'm in my late 40s, It's really hard not to be like, oh, do I have anything left in this 30s bucket instead of being able to look ahead? It's that reinvention has been harder for me than my reinventions in my 20s. And
30s. It's a totally, you know, I call them time zones. So they say that your biggest physical changes come in your around 40 and again around 60. And I know that I had to totally repurpose myself after breast cancer and really a huge spiritual epiphany.
Teddy, very much the same in that.
Yeah.
I'm a breast cancer survivor as well, too.
Teddy also just reinvented herself after breast cancer.
I had to, and I knew I had more to give, and I knew I had more to learn, and I knew I was going to turn into a zombie if I stayed in the same position. And again, people said, oh my God, you're like mentally ill. Check yourself into a hospital. You're number one, you've been there for years.
You could
do it in a coma, and that was part of the problem. Who wants to do it in a coma?
Right. You want to be fully alive.
I wanted to broaden my base. I wanted to broaden my message and make it more important and more helpful. And I had set myself up to a certain extent to do that. So, yeah, I think you can stay young in your brain, too young to be old, title of my second book, for a lot longer if you're constantly introducing new challenges. And I'm a risk taker, so that's kind of perfect for me. And let's face it, girls, podcasting and social media is the wild, wild west. It's times 10. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't, like you said, Diane, you don't really know because you don't have a live audience. You don't have immediate feedback. You know, if the topic that you're interested in is going to hit with the audience. So we're always kind of playing a guessing game. Like you want to be authentic and you want to talk about things that interest you, but what interests you may not interest, you know, 1,000 other people or whatever. So we're kind of just, it's kind of a crapshoot, but I think it's interesting. And I think you and I have this in common is that I think we're both risk takers. I think we realize, and for me, it was a realization because when I retired 2 months later, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. So here's my retirement. I had been diagnosed with breast cancer, a very aggressive form of breast cancer. And 2 months later, we hit COVID. So I was basically cocooned for 2 years. And I thought, I can't live like this. I need to do something. I need to get out with people. I need to interact. And I started my Instagram page, Teddy Loves Fashion. And I thought, well, who's going to watch this gray-haired woman who's 71 years old modeling clothes? And in the first year, I had over 100,000 followers. I have no clue. People ask me all the time, how did you get that many? I don't know. I couldn't tell you at all. I was just being me. I just took photographs of me. I modeled clothes that interest me. I showed that women who are of our age still have a lot of interests and things to give. And I think that's what you also promote as well.
Right. But I also think that the younger viewer, I know that we have a lot of 35-year-olds onward, and they don't want to buy into what they see as old age.
Right.
They want to buy into, how do you do it, Diane? How do you do it? You know, and you look fabulous and you've got a really contemporary hairdo and you're getting the makeup thing right. And they want to know that their progression through life is going to be better,
yes,
more healthful, more glamorous, more of the moment than their parents were.
Exactly.
And so maybe it's for the women that just expect more out of life. I don't know. But it has been a really magnificent learning curve for me.
I think aging is scary for women. You know, said, aging is scary. They think they're going to become these shriveled up prunes who have no value in life, you know, left. They have
what society tell you
nothing more to give.
Yeah.
And then they see somebody who like doesn't fit that mold. And it's like, well, what do you do? What's your secret? So I think there's teaching that the baby boomers can do for the next generation. That's why Melissa and I think bounce off each other really well, because we're basically two different generations. I'm old enough to be her mother.
Yeah.
Know? And so I think that Melissa, you hear her saying, she's scared. She's hitting this crisis. She's 40 something, you know, and she's afraid that, you know, she's not going to be as vibrant as she is right now. And what you and I are saying is, yes, you will be.
You'll be different. If you will have different priorities. You will have different limitations, for sure. But at the same time, I find now, and by the way, I was retired for exactly 2.5 weeks, and I was out going crazy. And then some guy called me up out of the clear blue sky and said, I do a podcast for baby boomers. I need a co-host like you. And I thought, sign me up. Yeah. And yeah, I would have shot myself if I had stayed bouncing around in the house. But I think it is simply a devaluation on the part of society for women. What if one of us at 82 years old had a newborn child like Robert De Niro?
Oh, please. We would come be on. Like a National Enquirer.
Yeah.
But
aliens land in space pod with child. Right. Yeah. We do not. Times. We don't get the breaks. We just don't.
You can ask the same thing about hair color. You know, women constantly, I cannot tell you how many times I hear this. Well, you know, you can get away with it, but I could never do that. They can't picture themselves with naturally gray, white hair because they think it's going to make them look old. And I always say, well, do you think that I look really old? No way, Teddy, blah, 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 blah. But I couldn't do it. I couldn't get away with it.
You know, I always hear, I'm not ready yet. I'm not ready yet.
I'm not ready yet. Yeah.
Now. It's really a process of letting go, then. That's what I'm hearing. You have to let go of this and just become something new, that risk-taking.
I didn't want all the chemicals and formaldehyde on my scalp after cancer.
Yeah.
That was not a big yes on my list. So I thought to myself, okay, it's growing back pure white. And now, to tell you the truth, on the streets of New York, I'll have really chic women walk up to me and say, you have the most fabulous hair I've ever seen. Now, they're not. They're still dyeing their
hair.
Dying,
but the
other thing was, it was so tacky when you have white roots. I used to, up until COVID, when the studio closed and everything changed and the salon closed, I used to have dyed red hair about 2 shades deeper than yours. I had to get my hair colored every 8 to 9 days.
Oh my God.
It grew like a maniac, and it looks so bad to have those white roots and then that red hair. And so I made a decision based on a lot of things, but I was very curious to see how the audience was going to react, and they loved it. And as a matter of fact, they loved me looking like Annie Lennox, but now I've always hid behind my hair, so yeah. I had to grow my hair again.
I think the common denominator is they loved you. I think that's the thing. You were authentically you somewhere.
I wanted them to love me. I felt they were the forgotten woman. Look, if you live in a major metropolitan area, which of course Chicago is, New York City is where I live, LA, where I'm from, you've got a lot of choices on your plate, and you've got a lot of high paid celebrity stylists, hairdressers, makeup artists, to help you make the decisions or the transitions. But if you are an average, everyday, hardworking American woman, you don't know what direction to go in, and there's no, who are you going to follow?
Right.
There's no one. Now you've got Demi Moore, who, by the way, I love that movie, The Substance, which is all about growing older in Hollywood.
I haven't seen that. I have to watch.
Oh, my God.
Is it streaming?
It's streaming now.
Oh,
it is. We should watch it this week.
Okay. I think it's Amazon Prime.
Okay.
So it is about, about growing old in Hollywood, how impossible it is to be an older female in the entertainment industry. And it's great because she's 62 and she just won a Golden Globe. Yeah. And she truly deserved it for this movie. But that's Demi Moore. And that's a woman who, when she was 55, was starring in Charlie's Angels 3 or something in a bikini. So she had a lot going for her. But even she catches it all the time, like, your hair's too long, it looks so fakey, you're too old for that, you're too blah, 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 blah. But I'll tell you what, you at least in Hollywood started to see a breakthrough because she won that award at 62. And last year, Oscars, Michelle Yeoh,
yes,
for Everything Everywhere All at Once,
yes,
won an Oscar as leading lady at the age of 62. So yes, magic time. You know, I also wanted to go, I was very fortunate to be in a profession, tele-retail, that was kinder to the older woman. You had an older audience, so they felt like they were taking a journey with you.
Mm-hmm.
But when you hit real life and then you hit social media and what you want to do with that, you're all alone again. I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
It's sort of like make it up as you go and pray really hard every night that you, you know, made a correct guess.
Yeah.
But I love it. And I love the interplay with the new audience. I do. Well,
I think you're doing a fabulous job. I love both of your podcasts. I think we need more baby boomer role models to show that we all have a lot more life in us. You know, we're not dead yet. I'm not dead yet. You know,
yeah.
I feel like I'm in that Monty Python movie, Monty Python and the Holy Grail, where they throw the guy and he's half dead in the wagon. He goes, I'm not dead yet.
Or you remember the guy, the Black Knight, and they chop off one
right.
arm and he says, what's wrong with you? Let's keep going. They chop off the other arm. Hey, what's the problem here?
Oh,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I feel that way.
Yeah,
so I think, Diane, keep going. We're rooting for you. We want to see more older, mature, I shouldn't say older. I hate the word old. I was just telling Melissa that today. I like the word mature because the connotation for old means used up, nothing more
yeah.
to do. Mature to me signals somebody who's come into their own, who is sophisticated, who knows who they are, who has confidence in who they are. To me, that really signifies a woman between the ages of 60 and forever. You know, I mean, look at Iris Apfel.
She was an icon
until the day she dropped dead at 101.
She was only 2 weeks away from 103.
Yeah,
Iris never became she became the accidental icon at what, 86
yeah.
years old? Unheard of. I used to make all her embellished clothing she was on HSN.
Yes. Oh, you did.
Yeah. And so every time we seemed to have shows kind of together on the same days. And, I would deliver her embellished jeans to her. And I want to say she was fearless and she didn't care. And she was an absolute original and she was tough as nails. Yeah. And she really dressed that way. She wanted life to be a party all the time. So I learned so much from Iris. And we went to the same hairdresser for 20 years. And she became my role model. I thought, okay, what is the essence of Iris? I can do it, and I don't care. I'd like to be successful at it, but if I'm doing it and having a good time, that's enough for me. And she really became a guiding light for me. So may she rest in peace.
Yes, I think she was an inspiration to everyone. I mean, for crying out loud, a woman who has a MAC makeup line named after her when she was in her 80s.
Yeah.
You know, she was just phenomenal. And I think, Diane, you're right. Her secret was she was just herself. You know, her was more is more. Unlike Coco Chanel, who would say, you know, look in the mirror and take one thing off. Iris was just the exact opposite. You can't have enough jewelry up, right, going up your arms, around your neck, embroidered clothes. I mean, to Iris, it was, she was like Jackson Pollock. You know, she was just like this canvas that you could just put anything on and just keep piling it on, and just made this beautiful thing that you could interpret however you wanted to.
And just in closing, I would say that the one thing that I thought was so amazing about Iris, people say this to me all the time, it drives me nuts. What does this mean? So, how do you kill time? Do you play Mahjong? I said, time is my most precious commodity at this age. I'm almost 80.
Yeah.
So time is my most precious commodity. Why would I want to kill it? I want to do something with it, and something big and something important, something helpful and constructive. Look at Iris. She built a business empire between 85 years old and 103. Well, I am sure a million people said to her, because Iris was also a socialite. She had a lot of money. Yes. Why are you doing this? Just relax into your old age. Yeah, I'm sure those people did not survive if they were within 2 or 3 feet of her. She just broke every rule, and the public loved her for it. I have Iris bagel chips in my... in my pantry. Oh, yeah. So that kind of is the yellow brick road for me. Iris laid it down with great flair. And there is no reason why you can't start a second life, a second business empire, a second you at any age. It is never too late to live out your dreams. Ever.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Diane. You're an inspiration and you're a role model for all of us.
Thank you.
Baby boomers, but the Gen Xers and the millennials and whatever all the, I can't even remember all the generations.
Me either. The Gen Zers. That's, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, if they can look at you and learn things, then you're still living and you're still accomplishing things and you're helping other people. You know, I mean, what could be better than knowing that you're handing down your wisdom and that other people are taking that wisdom as encouragement to make themselves better?
All they need to do, and especially for aging women, is believe anything is possible. You are your own worst roadblock.
Right.
So take away all those thoughts that it's too late, I'm too old, it should have happened 30 years ago. Just take that all away and remember, you can never recapture the past and you can never predict tomorrow. All you've got is today. And today is the youngest day of your life. You'll never be younger than you are today. So take advantage of it, girls.
Nice.
Thank you so much, Diane. You've been a wonderful guest and a wonderful inspiration. So we're going to ask the question again, Melissa. Why don't we dress for dinner anymore?
I don't know, Teddy. Why don't we?
I don't know.